Jope and the Bulldog.
I don't think that's a very good attitude.
It's Mike Jope.
You don't think? I don't think you should be butting in when I'm talking to my team. You're my assistant, okay? You're supposed to back me up and go get me juice boxes when I tell you. Now go get me a juice box.
You know who you're talking to.
It's the Bulldog.
I'm talking to the juice box guy.
You're crazy.
I'm not crazy. I'm just thirsty.
Why don't you go to hell?
No, you go to hell. While you're there, why don't you grab me a juice box?
I'm no juice box boy, I'll tell you that.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you
it's
are.
Mike Jope
I'm not.
Yes, you and are. The Bulldog. No, on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. Our guest now on the West Her Hotline is no stranger to these airwaves. How do you like that, Bulldog? I got airwaves in to the show today. Dan Leberfeld, longtime friend of ours at Jets Whispers, Jets Confidential Magazine. I often catch Dan Saturday mornings or afternoons on satellite radio with Vic. On my saved channels, Dan, you're right between the Fantasy Station and Howard Stern.
Not bad. I appreciate that. It's always great to be on Weathersfield.
Wait, first, that's a little bit of a shot. First Trista with her Rochester thing, and now Dan. They're coming for us.
Weathersfield Buffalo. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Thanks for paying attention to the legal ID, Dan. We like that about you.
Bulldog wants to ask.
My problem.
Yeah. Bulldog wants to ask you about the Knicks.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, like, what your experience is like and what the city is like. I mean, it just seems like such a phenomenon. We just went through, not that the Knicks have been a stranger to the playoffs for a long time, but we know it's been a very long time since they've been in the spot they're in now in the finals. We had a rebirth with hockey here and, like, watch parties all over the place, and it just got really wild when the Sabres finally made the playoffs. I'm just wondering how you're experiencing this Knicks run, if you are at all, Dan.
Well, it's absolutely huge here. I'm not the biggest NBA fan, but just walking around, whether it's the city or here in New Jersey, the people have definitely caught the fever. The Knicks have an enormous fan base in the tri-state area, and everywhere you go, you see mobs of people in New York City with Knicks shirts on. And after one of the games, I had the unfortunate pleasure of driving on 9th Avenue right when a Knick game ended, and the people were flying out of the bars and getting in their pickup trucks, waving flags. It is a huge thing. It's hard to even quantify how big the Knicks are here.
Very cool. And last night was that times something, you know, itself, just the comeback, and now we're in the finals, one win away from their first title since 1973. To the Jets, the Bills are wrapping up their mandatory minicamp section of the offseason today. Is that the same for the Jets? Are the Jets done or close to it or what?
No, the Jets actually have their mandatory minicamp next week.
Okay.
Which I'm a proponent of from an NFL league-wide standpoint. Have it as late as you can, so that gap isn't as huge, that ridiculous gap that many people are critical of. Even the union, the Western New York leader of the union, the former center Treader, has been critical of that. Why would you have a gap? You have off-season training where players are getting in great shape under the guidance of team strength and conditioning coaches. Also, there's a lot of classroom work, learning the playbook, updates to the playbook, new playbooks with new coaching staffs. And then they're off for 5 weeks where they can lose some of the conditioning and lose some of the mental gains they made. It makes very little sense. I understand it's the onus is on the players to keep their head in the playbook and stay in the weight room. But still, that gap makes very little sense when you compare it to other sports, which have their camps that flow right into the season. And so I think the Jets are doing a smart thing. Mm-hmm. Having it as late as possible, I don't know what difference 4 weeks or five-week gap is, but at least they're reducing the gap a little bit.
And the Bills are off for 7 weeks after today, 48 days to be precise, so even longer. So
yeah, it doesn't make a ton of sense, but it is what it is, and it doesn't look like it's changing unless something changes in the CBA as far as a lot of rules are concerned. And you know, Mr. Treader from your neck of the woods is going to really fight to the finish against the NFL. That's the kind of guy he is.
This is J.C. Treader, former
Yes.
Lineman.
Browns lineman.
Akron, I believe Akron, New York. Am I not mistaken there?
I don't know, actually. It's not Weathersfield. I don't know. Dan, so Aaron Glenn gets another kick at it this season with the Jets, at least at the beginning, probably the whole year. You know, what do you think? I think we've talked about this, but, you know, with now into the offseason, looking ahead to year two for him, what do you think of the chances that it works out for him? How much blame, I guess, do you think he deserved for last year? What about Glenn coming back?
Well, I think that there was no way he was ever going to be fired. He was only 1 year into a five-year deal, probably in the neighborhood of $10 to $11 million a year. I know NFL owners, you look at Mark Davis, how many contracts that he's still paying from fired coaches and GMs. I just don't think the Jets were going to go down that same road as the Raiders and some other teams firing a coach after 1 year, obviously the New England Patriots did that in recent history with Gerard Mayo. I just don't see it being that short a window for Aaron Glenn. Now, if they have another bad year, I think he'd be in a lot of trouble. But when you look at it, I think to his credit, he learned from a lot of mistakes, at least on paper. We won't know everything in regards to him learning from mistakes until they play actual games and we see how he manages the games and handles his timeouts and substitutions and the X's and O's. But as far as the roster and the coaching staff, he certainly learned his lesson. They have really turned over this roster, and the hiring of Frank Reich, who's so popular in your neck of the woods, one of the best moves in the offseason. I'm talking about player signings by teams or coaching additions by teams. He's right out of central casting for what they need to run their offense, which was a dumpster fire last year. As far as Frank's ability to be a master chess player calling offensive plays, and also not just that, being a really good bench coach for Aaron Glenn, being a guy who's coached at three different places as a head coach, if you consider Stanford as well last year, obviously the Indianapolis Colts and Carolina Panthers as a head coach. And we know how selfless Frank is as a human being. So this isn't a guy who came in here saying, wow, the coach is on the hot seat, is in trouble. I could get in there and he'll be fired after four or five games if they get off to an 0-5 start and I'll be a head coach again. Frank's not wired that way. You guys know him pretty well. He is in here to fix the offense and to help Aaron Glenn as a sounding board. So great hire in terms of Frank Reich. And I look at their defense, and I really like what the general manager, Darren Mooji, did this offseason. Instead of spending a ton of money on two or three high-ticket, high-priced free agents, big ticket is what I was looking for there, he went out and added tremendous depth. One of the problems for the Jets' defense last year was when they had to go to the backups on the D-line, and we know how much teams rotate, there was such a precipitous drop-off to the backups that teams were just destroying them when their backups came in. Teams were destroying them when the starters was in, but it was worse when the backups were in. Guys, they have such great depth on defense now that they really, really have a nice two deep now, so I think they could withstand injuries better than last year. The schedule's not that challenging. Once again, I probably say this every year, I think they can hang around till late November, early December, and at least compete for a wild card spot with this roster. But you've probably heard me say that before, so I don't know how much credibility I have saying that.
Yeah. First of all, real quick, good job on Treader. Born in Batavia, New York, attended Akron Central High School. So you had that. Yeah, I'm looking at their depth chart here, the Jets on defense, and I count eight new names in the starting column. That's an overhaul, man. Like that is a wrecking ball.
Yeah, absolute wrecking ball. And their run defense up the middle was horrific last year. You guys saw that in that meaningless game against the Buffalo Bills to wrap up the season, where the Buffalo Bills had four backup offensive linemen playing. And Ray Davis is a terrific player, not taking anything away from him. And he's obviously got a great story in terms of his life and what he's overcome. But Ray Davis had a career game that game, and he is the backup running back. I know he could start for some teams, but right now he is the backup to Cook. And, man, he looked fantastic behind a line with four backup linemen in it. I mean, that's one of those jump the shark moments for a defense. So they go out and get Tavondre Sweat, a 366-pound nose tackle in a trade with the Tennessee Titans. They signed another really good defensive tackle, David Onyemata, who was with the Atlanta Falcons last year. Not a household name, but a really good run defender. David Bailey in the first round in the draft to improve their pass rush. Demario Davis at linebacker to be the traffic cop to lead the defense. This defense, I'm not saying it's going to be top five in the league, but I can guarantee you it's going to be a lot better than last year. The personnel is a lot better, and the depth is a lot better.
With Dan Leberfeld here on WGR, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. Davis, if I remember right, also had a big-ish game against the Jets at night in New York his rookie year when Cook missed. It's like the only game Cook has missed here in a couple of seasons. Dan, what about the Geno Smith idea? I mean, if you're going to go there, you probably want to at least think about, you know, you're talking about hanging around into like November, December. You want to be able to do that with a quarterback like this. This is not, you know, a rookie, somebody just sort of a throw-in thinking about the 2027 draft or anything like that, which they might be doing. But I like Geno, and he's not been bad at all for the balance of the last three, four seasons. What are your expectations for him?
Yeah, you know, at first I wasn't that high on the move, but the more I looked into it, I've warmed up to it, because when you look at it from this standpoint, when he was the three-year full-time starter with the Seattle Seahawks from 2022 to 2024, his records were 9-8, 8-7, 10-7. Jets have not made the playoffs in 15 years, and they haven't had a winning record in a decade. So they would absolutely sign up for any of those seasons that Geno Smith had in Seattle. He's the quintessential game manager. He needs things around to be going well. Good offensive line, good running game, good weapons, a defense that keeps the score down. And I think he can have that year, that here with the New York Jets in 2026. Last year in Las Vegas, you know, was a train wreck. There's no way around it. But that team in its entirety was a train wreck, and it wasn't the kind of requisite supporting cast that Geno Smith needs to have success. The left tackle, Colton Miller, was out the whole year. And that really, really hurt that offense. They were playing backup left tackles, and very few teams in the NFL have a left tackle in the number two spot who you can hold up with. You have those freakish starting left tackles, and then there's a huge drop-off usually to the backup. I don't know who the backup to Deion Dawkins is in Buffalo, but usually it's not pretty when the backup left tackle comes in. So I'm going to give Geno a pass for last year. I just think that if they can get the Seattle Geno Smith with Frank Reich manufacturing production, and that's a term I've fallen in love with the last few minutes. When you have one of those really good chess player offensive coordinators, like Clint Kubiak was last year with Sam Darnold, they manufacture production, meaning they dial up plays for guys that might not be full progression readers, where the first or second read is an easy throw. You see this in college a lot. And the guy can matriculate the team down the field. But when you have the Jets had a rookie offensive coordinator last year who had never called plays on the NFL level, and he wasn't able to help Justin Fields last year. Now, Justin Fields, you could argue whether he's a starting NFL quarterback. You could have that debate. But the OC didn't help him. And I think Frank Reich is one of those manufacturer production play callers like Clint Kubiak was with Darnold and like Ben Johnson was with Caleb Williams last year in Chicago, where he really helps the quarterback out by seeing the game through the quarterback's eyes and helping him drive the team downfield, not putting the total onus on I'm calling this play, come hell or high water, you execute it. I think Frank's really going to help Geno, and I think they can get that Seattle Geno, and I think they'd be happy with that.
You mentioned the trouble protecting Geno last year in Vegas. How about that with the Jets here, Dan? Because the skill, you know, I've mentioned a couple times when the Jets have come up, like if you can get behind Geno as an idea, the skill position guys, I kind of like the group. The tight ends are pretty interesting. Breece Hall's excellent. Garrett Wilson's excellent. I liked Omar Cooper Jr. in the draft. We'll see. Even Adonai Mitchell, you know, had some moments. So what are the chances they can keep Geno functioning upright?
Yeah, I think the line was very good over the second half of last year. Early in the year, they were not on the same page, which is often the case with NFL offensive lines, because when you talk to former linemen in the league, they'll tell you that you need to get that work in the offseason. Now, it's not full contact, obviously, in the summer, but they feel like the cutback on spring and summer practices has really hurt offensive line continuity. So when you see early in the year teams sending stunts and twists and blitzes, and these linemen are not on the same page, I think of a lot of it has to do with limited reps in the offseason. So they got better as the season went on. The line looks really good on paper when you look at the two first-round offensive tackles in Membu and Fashanu. And then you look inside, Joe Tippmann, the former center, has really taken to the right guard spot. Josh Myers was a pleasant surprise at center last year. The only question mark is they lost two left guards in free agency, Elijah Barrett-Tucker, who signed with New England, and John Simpson, who signed with the Baltimore Ravens. So they're going with Dylan Parham, who actually played with Geno last year with the Raiders. People have mixed reviews on his skill set, so we'll see what he does that. So keep an eye on the left guard spot and Parham and his performance. But you're right, the skill positions, they're deep there. When you look at the fact that you have Garrett Wilson and you have Omar Cooper, who is a rookie but wise beyond his years, when you talk to very mature, learned a lot from Cignetti, a good culture builder, and he brings that to the Jets. So Cooper, Wilson, Adonai Mitchell, who was acquired in a trade with the Colts last year in the Sauce Gardner trade, which brought back two first-round picks, and Mitchell. Mitchell is a guy with an exotic size-speed ratio, like 6'2", 210, runs under 4'4", so he's got an exciting skill set. Tim Patrick is a player they signed a couple weeks ago. Don't sleep on him. The former Denver Bronco, who was turning into a star receiver out there, and then he had an injury nightmare happen with a torn ACL 1 year and then Achilles the next. The Broncos had paid him big dollars before he got hurt. He's a good receiver. So that receiver room is very deep. The tight end room, look at that with Mason Taylor and Jeremy Ruckert and Kenyon Sadiq, the first-round pick out of Oregon, who's sidelined right now after a minor groin procedure. But this is a guy who's 6'3", 240, runs 4.39. Omar Cooper ran 4.52. So that shows you how fast this tight end. And I know Frank Reich is so excited to move this guy around. He's the kind of guy who could play in the slot, on the outside, as a fullback. So Sadiq is a weapon Frank is quite excited about. So, and then you talk about Breece Hall, running back. So there's no shortage of weapons in this Jets offense.
I am not usually pretty tough to get to some optimism for the Jets. Much like yourself, perhaps, Dan, you know, talking about hang around in the schedule. I'm sort of Mr. Jet over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
every year,
Dan. I'm hearing you. I'm feeling you on these names. In fact, one name that you mentioned and talked about, so I'm in a draft Bulldog with Davis Maddock right now, a best ball draft, and we drafted Garrett Wilson, and we drafted Geno to go with him. And I suggested we draft Omar Cooper, right? Because you kind of want to stack these things. And he says, no, I think Mitchell is better. So then Mitchell would have to, you know, beat out a high draft pick. And that's going to be tough because he's on a new team here. But he's been there. It's just like he doesn't maybe have the same sort of like backing of the coaching staff or the organization perhaps. But what do you think of that take, Dan, that Mitchell might outplay Cooper this year?
Well, I think they like Mitchell. I don't think they're head over heels in love where they're going to have confirmation bias with him. Remember, he was kind of a throw-in in that Sauce Gardner deal. The two first-round picks were the selling point for the Jets, and they threw in Mitchell, who was kind of on the outs in Indianapolis. So he was thrown in. He's a good player, but he really doesn't have a leg up on Cooper because they're once again putting in a new offense. We talked about Frank Reich before. So they were both starting from square one, learning this offense. So there's no real advantage here other than the fact that Mitchell's been around a little bit. But, man, has he been in a lot of different offenses. So his head must be spinning. But you'll appreciate the quote that he used when I asked him about being in so many different offenses. I asked Mitchell that. He said, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. How many NFL players, quote, Nietzsche, is that how you pronounce it? I'm going to ask Mike, not the Bulldog would know, but I know Mike is.
I feel like he's quoting
much more intellectual than we are.
Hey, I hang out at a place called Nietzsche's.
I think he's quoting Kelly Clarkson.
Just so you know,
okay.
I think he's quoting Kelly Clarkson.
I think that might be right too. I don't really got to worry about those two. I think Mitchell's an outside guy. I think Cooper should be a slot guy, right? So
that you read my mind, Bulldog. Before I got into my shtick there, if you have a rim shot machine ready. By the way, speaking of shtick, I was expecting to take it on the chin for my Mike and the Bulldog tweet, but you guys took the high road.
I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've been down that.
We've been
down that road.
We know how you roll, Dan. Yeah.
Honestly, I was trying to help you downstate. I really feel like, you know, you guys are probably the best sports talk show in the state of New York now, being serious. When I say the Fan in New York isn't what it used to be, I don't want to use that in regards to the compliment because it sounds like a backhanded compliment. But I do think, so I'm trying to help you downstate.
I see.
You know, people listen online. And when I say Mike and the Bulldog, people are like, wait a minute. You know, the Mike and the Mad Dog thing. So I was trying to do some marketing for you downstate.
Thank you.
But getting back to the receiver thing. You're absolutely right, Bulldog. Omar Cooper was primarily a slot receiver last year for the Indiana Hoosiers. He's very good in the slot. And Adonai Mitchell's an outside guy. And here's another thing, you know, watching the minicamp, not to give away too much of what you see there, but this guy, you know who their team MVP was last year? This is how, once again, I want to do a backhanded compliment, but this was their returner, was the team MVP. Isaiah Williams, the kick and punt returner, was the team MVP. And watching in the spring, he's also a really, really good slot receiver. So with Cooper, while they like him a lot and he's going to play a lot, they also love Isaiah Williams. And if Cooper's in the slot splitting time with Isaiah Williams, I'm just trying to help you with your fantasy team. I think they like him for a lot, but I think he could be in the slot platooning with Isaiah Williams. So
gotcha.
Something to chew on.
It's a tough situation when the kick returner, punt returner is the team MVP. There's probably drought years here in the Bills past where Brian Moorman might have been that for the Bills. Or at least people would say, like, he's my favorite player or something. It would just be like, come on.
How about the Heisman? Didn't the Heisman Trophy winner go to that school? He wasn't the team MVP? Mendoza?
No, he's talking about the Jets last year.
Oh, okay.
The Jets last year. No, not Indiana.
Isaiah Williams, yeah. The slot receiver who's going to platoon with Cooper in the slot. Isaiah Williams was the Jets MVP.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Kick and punt returner. Right.
That makes sense that Bulldog would mention Moorman. Breece Hall, before you go, real quick. Breece Hall signed. He was sort of cryptic in his social media stuff. Do what you want with that. He ends up getting paid. Is he going to be three downs at this point, or is Braylon Allen interesting? What about the backfield real quick?
Yeah, Braylon Allen, I don't know if you saw that nugget the other day, 250 pounds now, 6'1", 250, very little fat. Look, I'm 5'11", 170. I got a bigger gut than that guy does. I mean, that guy, and he said he didn't try to gain the weight. It just came on naturally. He's 23 years old. So, you know, you're going to have that thunder and lightning kind of thing there. He's going to be the short yardage back. But Breece Hall is a three-down back. Allen will platoon once in a while, but it's mainly the whole show. This is the guy who's obviously one of the better backs in the league, but also an unbelievable receiver, guys. He's got the hands of a top-shelf receiver, the ball-tracking skills of a top-shelf receiver. So Frank Reich's going to love this guy. They're going to throw to him a ton. Yeah, it'll be the Breece Hall show at running back, but Allen in short-yardage situations at 250 now, that'll be part of the scheme as well.
Thank you, Dan, as always. Stay out of Midtown Manhattan
on game nights, at least, for
the next few days, I would say. Probably stay away from
that area. I will, and it's always great to be on the West Her Hotline.
Yes. Thank you, Dan. Talk to you soon again.
Wonderful.
Bye-bye.
All right, you got it.
Real quick before we're going to get to a break, and we'll have Sal coming up here in just about 40 minutes, but I want to read a tweet that went out from Sal just as we were starting our conversation with Dan. The Bills have waived cornerback Dorian Strong with an injury designation. He's expected to miss the 2026 season with the neck injury he suffered last year. This is procedural, writes Sal. Once he clears waivers, assuming he does, he will be placed on IR. So very tough news for a Bills draft pick that had some promise last year in the summer and just never got off the ground.
As Bulldog said, more on that with Sal in a little while. Lines open at 803-0550. Thanks for being with us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
TJ Park, I'll tell you one thing. I seen him on film the other day chasing a running back. I said, who the heck is that matching the running back step for step? I was like, oh, he a cheat code. As the more I start to watch film and, you know, learn my teammates and start to watch them do, and everybody in the league freaky in their own way. And he was chasing the running back. I was like, he really matching him step for step. So that's just one of the things that he's just explosive, fast, a young kid. I don't know the extent of what his role is going to be this year, but I'm happy to play with him.
Ed Oliver. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Sal Capaccio in half an hour. 803-0550 for your calls. We spent some time on the Knicks. Dan Leberfeld doesn't appreciate, and this is not a criticism, that we are not Mike and the Bulldog. It's, my last name enters the
enters scene, the fray,
usually, if not always. So it's funny to him and his followers that we're almost Mike and the Mad Dog, but not we are not the Mad Dog, and we're really not Mike and the Bulldog either.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't
show up in the Bulldog.
That's why I don't play with him on that.
Yeah.
Because it's not exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, if he really wanted to lean into it, he could have tweeted, I'm going to be on with Mike and the Dog.
Yeah.
That would
like Peter King would say.
Right.
He did say that once. Yes. We had audio of it. Yes. Let me tell you, no, it was Schoep and the Dog, wasn't it? Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit about Schoep and the Dog.
Winnipeg?
Yeah.
Sorry. All right. Non sequitur city here.
It's not too hot to talk Sabres, is it?
Ain't going to be ever too hot to talk Sabres,
okay, good.
In my opinion, this offseason.
Alex Tuch is gone, right?
Probably, yes. But I still think that everything you've been hearing about the separation, it's been pretty consistent. But I said this last week, and I'll say it again, as we're another week closer, that it's in the players' best interest and their agents' best interest to get word out. I think if you want to stay, you want to try to drive the price up any way you can, and maybe there's some pressure that comes if everyone's talking about it all the time or whatever. I don't know. I still think the deadline could come, and he could, at the last minute, just take the best offer the Sabres have. Because he never really wanted to leave. It wasn't in his heart. His wife really likes it here. Whatever. I don't know. I don't want to close the door entirely on that. He will be offered, if he goes to the market, more money somewhere else. There's almost no question about that. So if that's what it ends up being all about, and I'm not being judgmental by saying that. Like, if that's the path he goes, then, yeah, I think he's probably gone. But I think there's still, to me, hope that he just is trying to get the best deal he can for himself while never really wanting to leave. And if that's the case, then we could get kind of like, you remember Stamkos? How many years ago was that? We were hot and heavy about Stamkos. He's going to get to the market. He's near, you know, the family's nearby. Like, that might be compelling. It's not Toronto, but, you know, maybe Buffalo. And then on June 30th, not going anywhere. Staying 7 years, whatever it was, stayed in Tampa. That's similar. I mean, Tuch is not Steven Stamkos, a legendary cup-winning captain. But he was a kingpin guy on that team, and it seemed like he was going to go to market. He was the number one target in free agency, and at the last minute, he stayed. So I think that could still happen. But the most likely scenario is he's going to get a huge 7-year contract somewhere else for maybe $12 million a year and be gone.
Well, I'll say the line, I'm gullible. So I am basing my expectations here on these. It's often the case that the insiders all report the same thing, which, you know, isn't a bad thing because that might be a sign that it's accurate. Like, they're all getting the same information and saying the same thing. But it's more than just, to my eyes and ears, it's more than just the objective aspect that apparently the Sabres don't want to get to Tuck's request, as has been seemingly the case for months. I mean, going back well into the season. there's more language to these reports than just that. And that's also how I found, and we talked about it, Kekalainen to be, when he talked about Tuck a couple of different times at a press conference and then in a radio interview. He's saying a little bit more, I think. And then I think that comes through in Elliott and Pierre LeBrun and the like. I think he's saying a little bit more than, you know, look, we'd love to get this done, but sometimes you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe he doesn't want to do it. And, you know, there is a number that he would do it at, but it seems that it's not close to what Tuck thinks he can get. So what is that even to say about the Sabres' interest in keeping Tuck? It's really not, it's like a token effort. And I don't think I want to blame them, but that's what it sounds like to me. Mm-hmm. Is like, you know, we're not slamming the door on him, but we know how far apart our idea is from his. And then, you know, sort of what's the point when it's like that? You think I'm right?
Well, I would tell you not to be so hard on yourself for being. I mean, it's a bit of your brand. You're gullible. I think in this instance, I'm the one who's being gullible because I'm the one over here talking about the hokey hometown. You know, all that. Like, that's more gullible than the cold blooded reality of big time pro sports, where we're talking about, you know, a difference of $10 million over the lifetime of a contract, maybe. Like, it's a lot of dough. So, you know, it's easy to sit on the sideline and say, how much money do you need? So I think my, you know, explanation there of what, you know, what could still happen is more gullible than what you're suggesting, which is mostly reading the room, which, you know, there's every reason to think the guy's going to walk, I think, right now. The other little nugget I'll throw in, again, because I just thought of it while you were talking there, because, you know, the Sabres have seemingly been at whatever number they're at, and the gap has not ever really been bridged at all, effectively. You're right, the reporting has been consistent going back into, like, February, I think, on this. Is that Kekalainen... Sure, he sounds like he sounds, and I agree. He sounds like someone who is trying to prepare the fan base to lose a player that they like really like and want on the team, a very good player and an important player. So that's I think the right read too. He also though could know by July 1st whether he's going to be able to pull another big move to replace him. And if that doesn't come to fruition, if for some reason, whatever number of deals he might have irons in the fire on, he gets beat at the table and has to fold, he could that could change the Sabres' position. I'm not here to tell you that that's great process. And I don't know, Tuck maybe could end up offended. Maybe the way Drury eventually was when, you know, it took you how long? Now you're coming with the deal I would have took, you know, that kind of thing. But they could pivot to, you know, well, we couldn't get Robert Thomas and we couldn't trade for Matthew Knies and we couldn't, whatever grab bag you want to talk about of ideas that are out there. And those ideas are all out there and being written about. He can't pull something off that he feels suitably replaces him. Then, well, I was willing to go to 9.5, but how does 10.5 strike you? You know, because I don't want to take a step back. And if I've missed my window to get a suitable replacement or replacements for Alex Tuck, then maybe I got to just kind of suck it up and live with the contract that I didn't want to do a month ago.
I suppose. Not to push back on that, I think you'd agree with this. I see Kekalainen as somebody that has a lot of confidence in himself. And what can he or can he not do in a trade market? You're talking about a scenario where he has his answer by the end of June and then maybe makes a move on Tuck. But before that, I think he's somebody that can get people to say yes. He seems like he might have that trait. And, man, that's a good trait. We've had GMs that did not have that.
I hope that's right. I mean, his first kick at it in the winter was Colton Parayko, and that didn't work.
Well, they said yes to the deal.
Oh, sure.
The Blues said that
part, but get the player to say yes is the the tricky part.
And if you make that deal, and however it got out, without even yet having the consent of the player, all the more reason to think that we'll get this done. I mean, I'm not worried. I think he's got a lot of confidence in himself. And what I want, I've been saying about the Tuck situation is, apart from how much confidence he has, you know, if he's doing his job, which I would assume he is, he's got contacts everywhere. Some probably have been contacts of his for many years and has been working on ideas. You know, this is still the Blues, perhaps, or maybe it's every team. You know, here are the possibilities. He would know all that by now. Maybe somewhere there's a board over there that has every team and like every player that, or just be on a file or something, where you'd have a base knowledge of their availability and you'd already know your own interest in the player. What I want to have happen, nothing against the idea of keeping Tuck, is for this GM, a real GM, to have that figured out and be able to find his way to a player. He's got assets. Find his way to a player who is younger, that he thinks is the right fit and can produce almost to the same extent, if not to the same extent. Maybe he won't be 6'4". And he wants that too. That's how he acted at the deadline, going out and getting size like he did. But it just every passing day makes it seem that they're just not close on him. It does remind me of like Drury.
Yeah. You know,
a lot of these other ones over the last decade haven't meant anything. Just all right. And even last year, I'd have to admit, signing Zucker and maybe someone else. There was someone else. Greenway?
Yep.
Like, why bother when you're here? But the Sabres were rewarded for that. That's Adams. The Sabres were rewarded for keeping what they had together. And, you know, if not Greenway, Zucker paid them off with a very good season.
Let me just color. We've got to get to a break here. Just all the way into the lines here. I mentioned Knies. I don't want to get people. I don't want to irresponsibly get people excited. Like there's been a lot of reporting about a trade that almost got to the finish line at the deadline involving Knies with Montreal, Toronto and Montreal, and the paperwork was late and it didn't happen. And I just want to at least mention, it's possible he still gets traded. It's also possible that the GM at the time, Charlie Living, was like flailing around in a life preserver fighting for his life and might have done something really reckless, like trade an excellent big 23-year-old two-way forward who's certainly got, he's got Tuck's production in his future if he's not already there. Nice. Like, I love this player. He's under contract till 2031. 7.5 or 7.75 is the number. 23 years old. I mean, that's the guy you describe when you're saying go find a guy that, you know, replaces him, that's younger and cheaper, and like there it is. And that would be a excellent move. I just don't know that the new leadership in Toronto is going to be eager to trade him. I think the guy that was running the show before was on his last legs and might, it's probably great for Toronto that they didn't get that trade done.
And that would cost you somebody significant.
It's going to cost you a lot. Yeah, it should. He'd be, but if he's on the market, like that is tough. It's the division, whatever. They were going to turn into Montreal. That's plug and play. Excellent replacement.
Ooh, that would be fun as a GM to try to capitalize on another GM you think is lame duck. I mean, it's serious business over here. Oh, you're quitting the league? But maybe I can get a good deal off of you.
Right.
What will it take? What can I throw in? How can I sweeten this offer? We'll see. Sal Capaccio coming up in just more than 15 minutes. Talking Bills. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.